on today's Run to the Top podcast.
You know, if you told a runner, well, you got to cut your training plan in half for the next 6 months while you let your body adapt, most of them would say, well, I can't do that. You know, I've got a race coming up, or I've got some goal that I've set for myself. So this allows you to make that adjustment a little bit easier.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. And now here's your host, Stephanie Atwood.
Welcome, everyone. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, runner, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Today, we're focusing on shoes, those all-important, arguably most important part of running outside of the person who wears them. This week's special guest is Tony Post of Topo Athletic. This new company launched in 2013 by Tony and a small team. It is the culmination of over 30 years of his shoemaking and competitive running experience. Topo Athletic has a mission to develop footwear that honors the body's natural abilities. Topo is not exclusively minimal or maximal, but offers a range of platforms and features designed to amplify the natural running and fitness experience. Though still small, in 2016, Topo Athletic became one of the fastest growing and most critically acclaimed running footwear brands in the industry. Later on in the interview, we will be offering a drawing for a free pair of Topo's ultralight, ultra-fast, ultra-fly running shoes to one lucky listener and a discount code to all of you. So stay tuned for some great information and a chance to win. But first, we'll pause to acknowledge our sponsors.
Today's episode is brought to you by one of our favorite training apps, Strava. If you don't already know, Strava is the social network for athletes. You can track all your workouts, runs, and other activities, so it's a great training log, but it also doubles as a social network. Later in the episode, we'll share more about how we use Strava and how awesome it is. Plus, we'll give you the details on how to enter to win a free entry into the 2018 New York City Marathon, plus a $500 travel stipend from Strava.
So welcome back to today's podcast and our guest, Tony Post, founder of Topo Athletic. Tony's background of more than 30 years in running and shoemaking makes him uniquely qualified to speak to the subject. His running career started in earnest at Tulsa University and continued after college as he continued to run competitively. During this time, Tony also worked for Rockport Shoes, where he learned the craftsmanship of shoemaking. After Rockport, Tony became president of Vibram USA, where he helped create sole platforms for many premium footwear brands. He also helped spark the natural running movement with Vibram Five Fingers, an innovative footwear design that revolutionized the shoe industry and created a new category of running shoes. Let's trace the history of Tony's experience with running shoes and where the industry is today with that ever-evolving and essential piece of equipment, shoes. I sense that he will be a wealth of information for all of us to understand better how and why to buy proper running shoes and what that means for each of us individually. Thank you for being here today, Tony Post.
Oh, thanks for having me, Stephanie. Great to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited to talk to you because shoes are such an important part of running to me, and that you have a variety of shoes actually is a great opportunity to get some clarification on why you have that kind of variety within your shoe line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to start off with four basic questions. This goes to all of our guests. So here they are. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where are you living now? And since we're a running podcast, what is your favorite race distance or type of race?
Wow. Okay. So let's see. I'll start with I'm a happy, healthy 60 years old. Turned 60 last year in September of 2017.
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks. People always remind me it beats the alternative.
It does. So. And you're also in a new age range for any kind of competition that you're in.
That's right. I'm excited about that. That has its benefits. I was born in Greeley, Colorado. I lived a lot of my youth and grew up in Colorado. I now live in Boston, in the Boston area. As you mentioned, I was at University of Tulsa for about 5 or 6 years in between, but I've lived in the Boston area for over 30 years now.
And favorite race distance or type of race?
You know, I mean, it just depends on how I'm feeling. I mean, I've run a lot of different distances in my competitive career and even just for fun. So, you know, I like everything, I would say, up to or maybe even a little beyond a marathon. I've run, you know, 800 meter races. I've run the mile competitively. My favorites probably would be between 5K and 10K. I used to love when I ran competitively. I had a PR of around 24:16 in the 5 mile.
Wow,
that was a fun race for me. You know, that distance.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough one because it's almost a sprint, but you got to have some strategy in there as well. So let's go back to your early experiences with running. I know you've been running for quite a long time. And what got you interested in running and what kind of shoes did you use in the beginning of your running career? Because I know they've changed.
Yeah. You know, I got interested in running. I actually went to University of Tulsa as a golfer. I was on a golf scholarship at Tulsa. And my roommate was a track athlete. And so he dragged me out and got me interested in running. I used to run with him almost daily. The track team was doing two-day workouts, or he was at least doing two-day workouts. So I would join him a lot of times on one of his runs. And that's what kind of got me interested in running. I ended up losing my scholarship for golf at Tulsa. And so during that time, I continued to work on my running, improved, and was able to walk onto the track team.
Nice. And so when you walked onto the track team, you were actually pretty, you know, pretty far along age-wise by that time.
Yeah, I didn't get to run at Tulsa until my junior year. But I had been running with him and running competitively. He encouraged me to jump into an AAU race where I ended up winning the mile. It wasn't a great time. At the time, it was a 4:24.
Wow.
But the coach was there, you know, and that's not competitive for Division I college by any means. But he said, you know, for somebody who hasn't really run competitively, you could be pretty good. Maybe we'd focus you more on the 5K distance.
Uh-huh.
And so that's how I ended up walking on at Tulsa.
All right. And so what kind of shoes did you use at that time?
At the time, I think I was using Nikes. You know, Nike was kind of the hip, new, cool brand. Mm-hmm. I'm old enough, you heard me say. It's hard to think of Nike as a new brand at that time, but it was. And, you know, probably like a lot of runners at that time, I was influenced a little bit by Steve Prefontaine, and, you know, had followed his career as I was learning about running and knew he was from that area and was a Nike athlete.
Yeah. So you also did some track running. Did you run with the cleats and all of that kind of stuff when you were on the track?
Yeah, I ran both track and cross country at University of Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, we did use, you know, spiked footwear is what we would use for all competition on both track and cross country for that matter.
Spiked footwear. I know cleats is a different type of shoe, but it shows my naivete there.
No, it's the same idea. We knew what we were talking about.
Yeah. Well, thank you. So talk about your early experience with Rockport shoes. When did they come into the picture? What did you do? And what was the focus of the, or what was kind of the goal of Rockport as far as what they were trying to accomplish? And did they make any kind of running shoe?
So after I graduated from Tulsa, I wanted to train in an area where there would be other good runners to train with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had started kind of late, and I wanted to see if I could exploit the opportunity in running a little bit more. And so there were really three places you could go at that time. I could go back to Colorado. There were a lot of good runners in the Boulder area in Colorado, or you could go to Eugene, Oregon, which is where a lot of good runners were, or you could come to the Boston area. So I moved to Boston. That's how I got here to train with some better runners. And we had a great crew of people that we trained with, but I also knew I wasn't good enough to, you know, really become a full-time sponsored runner yet.
Gotcha.
And so I needed to find a job. I was getting a little bit of equipment and travel money sometimes from Nike, and they had a development facility. So I did met some of the people there, but you know, already it seemed like such a big company.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Rogers at the time, who was, you know, a great marathoner and a great runner and really just a great person, was actually sponsored by the Rockport company, which was unusual that Rockport was this little company that was actually a casual shoe company. It was the first casual shoe company to use athletic shoe technology in the footwear. And I just thought that was interesting. So I co-called the company and was able to land a job there. And that's how I started my running business career, I guess.
Wow.
Even though it wasn't really a running shoe company, I was interested in this small company that had a unique idea. And I just felt like I would learn a lot more in that kind of setting and environment.
Yeah. So what did you actually do with them? It seems like if they were small, you might have learned a lot of different pieces of the shoe business.
Yeah. So I started as in customer service. I was the customer service supervisor for a year, but I had a lot of interest in the product and in marketing. And I had some great mentors and teachers who kind of brought me in under their wing and quickly moved into a product marketing role. I was actually the first product marketing manager for the Rockport company for men's footwear. The company at that time was maybe a, you know, $30 million business. It grew to become about a $500 million business.
Wow.
So I was just fortunate to be in the right place at the right time, where I had a lot of curiosity and interest in the business. As a runner, I used to take a lot of our products out at lunchtime. Since it was supposed to have running shoe technology inside, I would run in the shoes at lunchtime to test them out.
Mm-hmm. And were they actually running shoes, or were they just using running technology?
No, they were really designed as casual shoes.
Uh-huh.
And then we introduced dress shoes.
Uh-huh.
And as you may have heard, around 1990, I ended up, when we were launching our dress shoes, I was using the shoes regularly at lunch for lunchtime runs. One day I came back and said, geez, you know, I think they're so comfortable, I could probably run a marathon. And I ended up running the 1990 New York City Marathon, as well as the 1992 London Marathon, in Rockport dress shoes, and ran a 2:49 in Rockport dress shoes. You know, I wasn't competing anymore. I was, you know, this is just, you know, running kind of casually, but, you know, for still trying to do reasonably well. So I ran a 2:49 in the dress shoes.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. So you left Rockport eventually after 15 years, I think. And you moved on to, is it Vibram or is it Vibram? Because I've heard both descriptions.
Yeah. If you were traveling in Italy, usually people would pronounce it as Vibram. The founder of the company was a gentleman named Vitali Bramani.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Italy, you would pronounce it like Vibram. Here, I think a lot of people saw the word and read it similar to the way you say vibrate.
Yeah.
And so they said Vibram. And that's how it was kind of known by most people here in the U.S.
Okay. So either one would fly.
Yeah.
And what sparked this change? And what did you learn and contribute to running shoes when you worked at Vibram USA?
So, you know, I stayed at Rockport a long time. As you said, I was there for 15 years and ended up running all of product and marketing for the company. The company was acquired by Reebok, and so it became part of a larger company. And it was fun. I learned a lot, but I felt like I had gone about as far as I could go in my career there. I knew the family that owned the Vibram brand in Italy, and they were interested in starting a subsidiary company in the U.S. and asked if I would help them to do that. Their brand was licensed in the United States prior to that. So it was kind of an interesting entrepreneurial opportunity. You know, you could start a company, but with a little bit of support and background of a parent company. And the brand had a great reputation, but it just didn't have a lot of business in the United States at the time. So our opportunity was to call on a variety of different footwear brands here in the U.S. and design and produce what we call the platforms for those companies. So we would oftentimes design the midsole, outsole platform and produce that for them.
And so, as I understand it, Vibram, from my historical perspective, and this is just a person who's been involved in outdoors for a long time, they were mostly involved in like hiking and that kind of shoe. At least that was my initiation into Vibram. But you enhanced that with running shoes. Talk about that, and also clarify if I'm asking the right question there, or if I was just off because of my own individual experience with Vibram.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, that founder of the company, Vitaly Bramani, actually was originally a mountain climbing guide. Mm-hmm. And he owned a sports shop. And during an expedition that he was leading, they were unable to make a safe descent because of the equipment that they had. And so that was his inspiration to create soles made from rubber that would be used on mountaineering boots. So that was his invention and his idea. And so the company kind of came from that heritage. So you're absolutely right. It was known for making soles for shoes in mountaineering or trail or, more the outdoor side
right.
of your closet. It also, though, because of those characteristics, became known as a great brand for a lot of work and industrial footwear. We actually ended up producing soles for every branch of the U.S. military while I was there, too. So it had this really good background and strong, durable soles, but we were never able to really penetrate the athletic footwear market. And of course, at this time I'd been a runner for many years and I felt like, there was more opportunity for us to do something there. And so we identified that as a market where we wanted to try to expand into that, mm-hmm. but we weren't really able to find a partner. We called on several different running shoe companies, but they had respect for Vibram as a company in the outdoor industry, but they weren't really sure we could offer much value in running shoes.
So how did Five Fingers come about?
So Five Fingers came about when, Vibram USA had this interest in kind of getting into that market, into the athletic footwear market. And on one of my trips to Italy, when I was over there, the company had already secured the rights to this design for this really strange product. It was almost like a slipper with five toes. And it was a product that a design student in Italy had developed as his senior thesis. And the owner of our company was so intrigued and thought it was such a unique idea that he acquired the rights to that and actually hired that individual to join the company. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody knew quite what to do with the product or mm-hmm. how it would be launched. I was kind of trying to overcome some personal injury problems. I had a bad knee at the time, probably from overtraining or, maybe doing too much. And so I was talking to some friends of mine who were, this is before any of the barefoot kind of conversation came about, who were training barefoot. And my gym wouldn't let me train barefoot. But I saw this product that our company had acquired the rights to. And I thought, you know what? This would be a great product for me to use in the gym.
Yeah, totally.
We got the product. I used it a bit in the gym. And then we decided to kind of turn this into more of a business. And we didn't have a clear picture exactly how it would be used or who would use it. But one day when I was working out in the gym and I was still having some issues with my knee, it was getting a little better, but I decided to just go out for a jog. And during that jog, I found that because it had this thin sole, I had to land more up on the ball or the midfoot area. I couldn't heel strike the way I traditionally might back then. And when I was forced to run like that, it forced me to change my form, my knee pain went away.
Wow.
And so that's kind of when we said, this is an interesting idea for people who might be interested in or might be overcoming some kind of injury that they can use this product for both working out in the gym and running.
So talk about this natural running, barefoot, minimal movement, because clearly you're still involved in that with Topo. When did you start marketing these under Vibram USA? And then where is that movement now with the whole idea of natural running and minimal shoes?
So we launched that as a business in 2006. We launched it to the consumer marketplace, and it was small. It was a really tiny little business. And but, you know, it got a little bit of traction. At least it was interesting to people because it was visually so distinctive and different.
Right.
And I think we were still learning a lot at that point about what the whole, I mean, we didn't even call it this at the time, what a natural running experience would be. Mm-hmm. I knew a professor at Harvard University, and we contacted him, and he was able to help us do some research so we could learn a little bit more about you know, why this seemed to be working for me or could work for other people.
Right.
And in the process, what we discovered was that for so many years, running shoes had kind of become more and more built up.
Right.
In other words, you know, as the industry evolved from the running shoe industry evolved from the late 60s, early 70s, shoes back then used to be thinner and, you know, lightly cushioned and allowed the foot and body to work in a more natural way. But over the years, they'd gotten thicker and more robust and a lot more plastic parts and stabilizers and support and structure.
And also more, this one, I was just talking to some people about this the other day, the huge drop from the, you know, from the heel to the toe really has been a major change since the 60s and 70s, that transition into the drop.
That's right. You're absolutely right. I mean, especially in the 70s, I think Nike was among one of those companies who kind of figured out that, you know, if we put this big cushion of EVA in the heel, Bill Bowerman even wrote about this in his book, that, you know, people could stride a little longer, land on their heel and land comfortably, mm-hmm. or at least, you know, what they thought was comfortably.
Yeah.
And so what we found, though, you know, in our research and through our experiences were that, you know, all of these changes had kind of, they hadn't done anything to really make us healthier or stronger, or in some ways, because you were casting the foot, you're casting it so much that the muscles begin to atrophy, you lose range of motion. It encourages a heel strike, which also can send more shock up through the body, through the ankle, knee, hip, lower back. And so the reason when I first started running in those five fingers that I felt that difference was I couldn't heel strike. I was forced to land more up on the ball of my foot or the midfoot area.
Absolutely.
And you use the body in a more natural way.
Right.
You would engage the muscles in the medial arch, the lower leg, and you would keep your feet more under your body. You weren't stretching or reaching out. You tended to spin a little bit more, if you will. You know, your yep. legs were moving a little more quickly underneath.
Right.
So that's what we became to, you know, first describe as more of a natural running experience. And the idea that you could run this way, you know, was probably kind of a new concept or a new idea to a lot of people.
Absolutely. And I wanted to interject something here because I have been running forever. I started running in the late 60s and have seen the evolution. And then I'm very involved in coaching as well as training, personal training. So I've seen this change. And what moving on to your Topo brand now, what I have seen as a coach and having been in this for so long, just watching the running movement, is that while I really very wholeheartedly believe in minimal style of shoes for the best running form, and people need to strive toward that, I believe, but they can't go from a 12 millimeter heel drop to a minimal shoe without having a lot of issues there. And that seems to me like that's a lot of what Topo has addressed, is this sort of this transition from really heavy duty shoes to minimal shoes and some leeway in between to address those issues and the type of body and runner that each of us is individually.
That's absolutely right, Stephanie. I mean, as much as we loved five fingers, we knew that it didn't work for everybody. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people probably got injured trying to make the adjustment or the shift from either a thick, more cushioned shoe to a more minimal shoe, or from 10 or 12 millimeters of heel to toe drop to zero drop. And so we wanted to make a range of shoes with Topo that would invite more people into this concept, which means that we needed to have a range of shoes. So Topo, we said, you know what, we're going to build the brand around three or four key characteristics.
Cool.
The first one being the fit. So we wanted to have a fit that's very roomy up in the toe box. So you mm-hmm. can use your toes for balance, agility, control. It would be a more traditional, you know, looking shoe in that it wasn't five toes. It was right. a closed toe box.
Yeah.
But still, you'd be able to allow your toes to spread and splay naturally and move more naturally than they would in a typical kind of running shoe.
Right.
A lot of times when you have a fit like that, however, it can feel a little too sloppy or mm-hmm. maybe it doesn't grab you securely in the heel. So with Topo, we want to make sure that the shoe fit more securely in the waist and snug in the heel
yeah.
so that the shoe felt more connected to your body. So even though you have plenty of room for your toes to spread and splay and move naturally, the shoe itself feels much more connected to your body and you feel secure and confident in that way.
Yeah.
So that fit was absolutely the first thing that we wanted to do.
Interesting.
The second thing, you kind of hit on it already, was that we didn't want to be exclusively a zero drop company.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to have what we would call low drop. So we decided to make shoes with 5, 3, and 0 drop.
Mm-hmm.
5 millimeters of heel to toe drop still encourages a midfoot strike, which we think is, you know, that way to run in a more natural way where, you know, you probably take a little shorter stride and more of a spinning effort, as I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
So we like the idea of creating shoes that allow somebody to transition more comfortably to a zero drop. Personally, I love, you know, the zero drop, but I know that not everybody can make that jump right away. And a lot of times runners aren't willing to, you know, if you told a runner, well, you got to cut your training plan in half for the next 6 months while you let your body adapt, most of them would say, well, I can't do that. You know, I've got a race coming up or I've got some goal that I've set for myself. So this allows you to make that adjustment a little bit easier.
Yeah, I think that's a great approach.
Yeah.
I love the minimal as well. I've been running in minimal shoes for a long time, although I never moved into the five fingers, but I love minimal shoes and zero drop works really well for me, but it was a transition for sure. And, you know, really focusing on good form. And as you said, limiting the race distance so that I could transition without getting injured.
Yeah. I think it's something that, as you said, actually does feel good. I think your body responds to that, mm-hmm. but it's that transition that sometimes can trip people up.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a couple of other things we do. We also tried to, as a part of that same philosophy, try to make our shoes very lightweight. And so when we started, we had to start with a little different kind of construction. Typically, you know, when we were first getting started, people would, you know, you'd have a mesh upper with a pattern stitched to that mesh to give it structure and body. The problem is when you're starting a company, a lot of times you can't afford to buy those materials that you cut and stitch to the mesh because there are certain minimums on colors or minimums to the materials themselves.
Sure.
So we had to figure out a different way to do that. And so we started by printing our uppers literally like almost like a screen print or kind of a combination between a screen print and 3D printing, the upper directly onto the mesh. And what we found is it made our shoes lighter and it made the shoes seamless on the inside. So there were
nice
threads or anything or no hot spots that could rub or mm-hmm. Irritate the foot.
Mm-hmm.
So we loved both of those characteristics. We also found that it even made the shoes, the uppers last longer. The thread is typically the weakest part of the shoe. And so by eliminating the threads and coming up with this different construction, it made the shoes lighter, you know, strong and durable. And as I said, relatively seamless on the inside. Since we've done that, of course, it wasn't really a protectable idea. So you'll see lots of people are now making shoes that way too.
Mm-hmm.
Still think it's a really cool and innovative way to make footwear.
Okay, so shoe-wise, you've got these different types of shoes, and we're going to have a chance to talk a little bit about the Run Fly shortly, because you're giving one of those away to one of our lucky listeners.
The Ultra Fly.
Yes, thank you for clarifying that. But talk about the one of each of the different drop shoes and what the claims to fame are with each.
Yeah, so the first thing is we make shoes for both road running and for trail running. And in a lot of cases, you know, people might use our road running shoes. They'll also use them for walking, or people use our trail running shoes also for through hiking or day hiking. So, you know, we design the shoes for a specific purpose, but then they get used to, you know, maybe even a wider audience. One of our zero drop road shoes is quite popular even among people who do CrossFit or who are gym enthusiasts. So we also believe that's an important part of this whole, you know, staying a healthy runner.
Totally.
Is as you mentioned, you do it, you know, spend a little bit of time in the gym or working out on a regular basis, where doing things where you're improving both your strength and your mobility or range of motion. And so we have a few shoes that kind of fall into that category too. The differences between 5 millimeters of heel to toe drop or 3 or 0, those are more personal decisions, I think, for people. Just tell, you know, it's almost like we also make shoes, some that are very thin and some that have a little more cushioning.
Mm-hmm.
It's really providing the customer with some options or choices that when they put it on, they say, wow, I love Topo Fit, but maybe I need a little more cushioning, or maybe I can't quite transition to a zero drop shoe. I need a 3 millimeter heel to toe drop or a 5 millimeter heel to toe drop. So having these different models that have, you know, some of those choices allow the consumer or the runner to find the shoe that's really the best way for them to get started.
Yeah, I'd like to interject something here, because I have actually tried the Terra Venture, and I work at REI part-time. And so we sell some of the Topo shoes and mostly on the trail side. But I had a fellow in the other day who I put in a pair of Hydro Ventures, which is the waterproof version of the trail shoe that's also called the Terra Venture. And he was a big guy. He weighed like 230 pounds. And we both decided that he needed something that was a little more substantial than just the lightest running shoe that was out there, even though he liked that idea of having something light. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it does. But It just depends on what that individual really feels like they need.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's the exciting part. You know, when you have a shoe company, one of the fun things is that you get to spend a lot of time talking to people about what they like or what they need, and
right,
then go back and create that kind of stuff. So it's an endless process, you know, of refining, listening, adjusting, you know, and it's really rewarding when you get to have those conversations and you know that you've delivered something that people say, wow, I couldn't get this anywhere else. You know, thanks for improving my life, or, you know, allowing me to, you know, run better, or things like that.
Totally. Yeah. And I know from my own experience, and also from seeing these models that we sell at REI, that you definitely cater to a wider toe box, which most works really well for a lot, especially American feet. A lot of American feet are a little wider, and they need that extra space there and have room for wiggling their toes. Talk about the shorter distance races, like a 5K, what Topo shoe would you recommend for that distance? What would be the best for a competitive 5K in your Topo line?
You know, it depends on the individual. So if I was on the phone with a guy named Anthony Famiglietti. Some people know him as Fam. He's a 2-time Olympian. You know, Anthony's fast. And so for him, he prefers, you know, a thinner shoe like our ST2 model. It's a 16 millimeter zero drop platform. It's super lightweight. And he, you know, because of the way he moves, that's a really super comfortable shoe for somebody like him. Uh-huh. But a 5K, you know, means different things to different people. And for somebody else, they may want a shoe with a little more support or a little more substance to it. And so they may want a shoe like the shoe we're going to give away today, even the Ultrafly. It's a funny thing. In our line, our two best-selling shoes are the Ultrafly, which has probably the most cushion underfoot, is a 5mm drop, and the ST2, which is our least cushion model and is a zero drop. So it's ironic that, you know, what it teaches us is that, wow, there's really a strong consumer for both ends of the spectrum here.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because as a coach, a lot of the people who come to me are novice runners who their first race is going to be a 5K. So obviously they want a shoe that is going to help them from getting injured and is going to help them make that transition into better form. And so your Ultrafly sounds like it's going to be a better shoe for them than the SP2, which would assume that a person is competitive already and has worked on their form to the point where, you know, they're not going to get injured running in a minimal shoe.
Yeah, it's a little, I do a lot of cycling, both mountain bike and road bike. And I used to always ask, you know, what's the best bike? And people eventually, you know, you ask enough people who are experts at this, and what you find is it's really the bike that fits you. The bike that really delivers the best fit and feel for you is the best bike. Yeah. And it doesn't matter, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter about all the different features and benefits. If you've got the fit and feel that, you know, really is dialed in for you, that's probably the best product for you.
That's the best shoe for you. Now, of course, it might vary from training to racing too, right?
Of course. Yeah. And I like to, you know, another thing is, and I know not everybody can always do this, but I like to use different shoes on different days because you're using different muscle groups.
Totally.
So there are plenty of days that I will be in our most minimal shoe. But there are also times where I'll be in, you know, a shoe like the TerraVenture that you mentioned a little while ago, which is a little more substantial shoe with a bigger trail bottom on it, you know. And so I like to mix it up a little bit, just like I like to mix up my workouts, use different muscle groups, you know, put myself into different situations. I just feel like that makes me a better runner and a better athlete.
Yeah, it sounds like you've taken on that philosophy with your company as well. And I think that's an important part of making, of succeeding. So I wish you well in this new company. And Topo is the way you pronounce it, right? Not Topo.
Yeah, Topo is, so when I was in college, back when I was about a million years ago, as we already discussed, that was a nickname. So Tony Post got shortened to Topo.
Yeah. So I know I figured that out when I was looking at, you know, when I was Googling you and figuring out where Topo came from, because there could have been a lot of different answers to that. And I thought, oh yeah, that's his name.
Yeah, that's shortened. Where it came from.
Yeah. So Tony, I am going to ask you a question that's a kind of on a different bent here. What experiences have had the biggest impact on your life and where you are at this point in time?
Wow, that's a good question, Stephanie. You know, I mean, I'm lucky that, I guess one of the things I'm lucky in my career is that I've been able to travel all over the world and meet a lot of different people. And I don't think there's anything much more enlightening than the opportunity to not only just travel someplace and see another culture, but to actually work in that culture or collaborate with people around ideas. I think that's, you know, a super valuable experience. I mentioned earlier how I ended up running the marathon in the dress shoes. Another experience I had with Rockport was we were one of the first companies to be involved with the Leadville Trail 100, which was a 100-mile foot race through the Colorado Rocky Mountains. You know, today people would just call it a typical ultra marathon, but back then, you know, this is before there were very many people doing it.
And born so, to run.
Yeah. So being involved in that and, you know, in so many ways, you know, we started also the mountain bike race, but we brought the Tarahumara Indians up to race and compete in that race. That was awesome to see them perform and meet them. And, you know, those kinds of experiences, it's a great thing when I think about all the different places that running and the shoe business has been able to take me in my life. And I think those are the things that probably have made the biggest impact on me.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that. I'm impressed with your starting a shoe company, and I wish you much luck with that. Now, Topo has offered a Run to the Top listener a chance to win a free pair of Ultrafly running shoes. Would you go into a little bit more information on this particular model?
Sure. Ultrafly is a great shoe, one of our customers' favorites. It's a little more cushioned shoe, has a 5mm heel-to-toe drop, has an outsole that is a good road sole, but it has a little bit of cleating on it, so you could use it on light trail. It has a three-piece midsole that, in addition to offering a little more cushioning, it has what I would call a little bit of light guidance to it. There's the medial side EVA is slightly firmer than the lateral side, so it just supports you as you roll through the gait cycle. Has a good durable mesh upper. And I think people, the thing they comment on the most with the Ultrafly is they just love the fit. Really grabs the waist securely, but lots of room for the toes to spread and splay.
So this offer for the free shoe is good from the first day of this podcast, which is going to be March 28th, and through midnight of Tuesday, April 3rd. So you can enter the contest at runnersconnect.net/topo. That's runnersconnect.net/TOPO. And additionally, all listeners are eligible for a 15% discount on all Topo shoes. Just use the code RunnersConnect15, that's RunnersConnect15, when checking out on Topo Athletics website, and their website URL is topoathletic.com.
Very good, Stephanie. We're happy to offer that to your listenership.
Thank you. Yeah, that's really great. Thank you so much for offering that. I wonder if I can enter. It might not be fair.
Yeah, isn't there something about friends and family that you're not allowed to do that?
That might be the case. Anyway, we're going to change gears here and move into the final kick, and we will be back shortly after recognizing our sponsors. So stay tuned.
If you're not already on Strava, boy, are you missing out. Strava is the social network and fitness app for athletes. It's fun, informative, and keeps you and your friends fit. Literally millions of people use Strava to track their runs, rides, workouts, and connect with others. One of my favorite ways to use Strava is to connect with my running club. Strava makes it easy for us to follow each other's workouts. I can't tell you how many times just seeing how well other members of our group were running helped motivate me to get out the door. I also love being able to see all the data from my runs, like splits, elevation, and a map. It makes training so much fun. And the best part is that for a limited time, Strava's offering podcast listeners a chance to win an entry to the 2018 New York City Marathon plus a $500 travel stipend. It's the largest marathon in the world and notoriously difficult to get into. For your chance to win, just go to runnersconnect.net/Strava to enter and read the official rules. That's STRAVA, Strava.
Well, we are back and we are moving into the final kick. Tony, do you know about the final kick?
No, you're going to have to. I've had a few final kicks. I've been kicked a couple of times too, but you'll have.
Yeah, well, it might be some of both. It was actually started by Tina Muir, who was the first host for the Run to the Top podcast. And I thought it was a great idea. What it is asking you a couple of running type questions. And it's not a test, so you're not going to fail it. But it's something that I think our listeners will enjoy. The questions, there's three of them, and the first one is, what is your favorite local training run? And tell us enough about it that our readers could actually find it if they come to your city, where to park, the name of the starting point, how long, terrain, safety issues, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So one of my favorite runs is along the Charles River, and a great time to do it is around dusk, and I would suggest that you park on the Cambridge side. and run on the Cambridge side toward Boston. It's a beautiful run. And when the sun is setting and the lights are coming on the buildings across the river, it's just really pretty.
Wow.
It's a great setting any time of year. You can do it summer, winter, and it's pretty populated. So it's not crowded by any means, but you know, from a safety perspective, there's always a lot of folks around. So it's a really nice run. And I think your listenership would enjoy that.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, this has been one of my favorite parts of the podcast because I'm learning, of course, all of these cool places to run when I go. And that's something about running. I mean, it's like you always want to get your runs in no matter where you are. So having some great runs and knowing how to access them is a really fun part of my hosting this podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, question number two, recommended running book.
Oh, boy. Now, I guess I'll have to give you two here because one, of course, I have to say is Born to Run. I think Born to Run was a great book. Christopher McDougall, who's the author, did a terrific job. It's a good story. People have enjoyed it. It was a New York Times bestseller. And probably, you know, some of your folks have already read the book. So I'll give you another one that is one of my favorites that's a little more obscure. And this would be a collection of running short stories by Kenny Moore. And so Kenny was, he actually finished fourth in the 1972 Olympic Marathon in Munich. Kenny wrote for Sports Illustrated for years. He's a terrific writer. And he does a great job of weaving running into so many everyday life stories. And it's his collection of short stories is one of my favorites.
Well, so cool. Now, do you spell his name Kenny Moore?
That's correct. Yeah.
Very okay, good. Cool. And do you think it's available on Amazon?
I know it is. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. And then the final question or final thing that we're interested in from you is advice for new runners.
So, you know, I think as new runners, and this is probably good advice for all runners, and we say it a lot around here, you know, because we have all runners and athletes in the office, is to always listen to your body, you know, and kind of listen to what your body's telling you. There are days where you feel great and you know, on those days, you should probably feel free to go a little harder. And there are some days where you just don't feel quite up to it. We say two things. One, always try to get out the door. So once you get out the door, that can change. You know, you get on the road or on the trail and you can start to feel a little differently and your mood changes and you pick up. But if you are feeling a little bit sluggish just because maybe you had a long run or a speed work set for that day, don't feel like you always have to push yourself through it. Bill Rogers, again, has a couple of great quotes about this. You know, on his good days, he would go hard. Maybe he didn't even have a hard workout set for that day, but if he felt good, he felt like he should go hard. And then on days sometimes where he didn't feel as strong or just wasn't up to it, he might cut things a little shorter or change his workout to something that was more suited and save a harder effort for a day when it felt more right.
I like that. Listening to your body, it makes so much sense. And it is a sign it's a sign of growing up. It's a sign of wisdom. And fortunately, a lot of new young runners have the opportunity to push that concept and overdo it and then recover fairly quickly. But as we age, if we are coming into this new, it's even more important to just realize that if you want to be moving for the rest of your life, that you've got to listen to your body and let it be your major guide. And then also get some training help, set some goals, you know, all those things that will actually get us out there moving.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay. Well, is there any question that you have for me? This is, you passed the final kick. You made it to the finish line, but do you have any questions for me?
No, this was great. I really appreciate your interest and I hope that your listenership found value in this. And we love the interaction. So anybody who wants to email us can email us at topoathletic.com. There's an information area on our website. You can ask questions or ask for more information about the products. We love hearing from people. We love the connection. I mean, that's one of the fun things in business is the chance to connect with consumers and people on a regular basis. So I just want to thank you for the opportunity. No questions for you, Stephanie. You're off easy this time, but thanks for the opportunity.
Well, thank you so much. And let's go through that contact information specifically. It's topoathletic.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Or the website. Now, are you also on Facebook and Instagram and all that kind of stuff?
We are, yes. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram the same way.
Okay, that sounds good. And don't forget about the Ultrafly running shoe drawing for one lucky run to the top listener and the 15% discount on Topo shoes this week only for all of you. So enter the drawing at our website at runnersconnect.net/TOPO, Topo. Use the code RUNNERSCONNECT15 on the Topo Athletic website at topoathletic.com. for your discounted purchase. That's for all of you. So thank you for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. Follow us and learn when you've won at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook at runnersconnect.net/FB. That's for Facebook. Remember that this current offer is good for 1 week only, and the winner will be announced next week, 1 week from today, and posted on our Facebook Winner's Circle. Subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, and all of the other possible places to listen to a podcast. Tony Post with Topo Athletics, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having us, Stephanie. Great to do this and be a part of it.
And thank you to all of our listeners. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.